start again, and we are going to start with two smaller but not less important issues. So, Greg, I give the floor to you.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Agenda paper 4 is about exposure draft onerous contracts, the cost of fulfilling a contract, which the board published in December last year. ED proposes to amend IS 37 to specify that an entity includes the costs that relate directly to a contract when it's assessing whether that contract is onerous. This means that an entity includes the incremental cost of fulfilling that contract and an allocation of other costs that relate directly to contract activities. Agenda paper 4A provides an overview of the amendments proposed in the exposure draft. So later today, you're going to be discussing the board's project on provisions, and so I just wanted to highlight why this project has been separated out from the provisions project. And the principal reason is that the board considered this matter to be more urgent than the provisions project. And this is particularly because IS 11 has recently been withdrawn. And IS 11 had contained specific requirements for what costs an entity does and does not include when assessing a contract within its scope, whether that is onerous. Entities that previously applied IS 11 will now be applying IS 37. And that's, doesn't contain as specific requirements. And so the Interpretations Committee had received a request to provide this guidance. In addition, the board also considered this to be a separate and self-contained project. So the purpose of this session is to ask to obtain your preliminary views on the proposals in the exposure draft. And we'd also be interested if you've heard any other feedback from your jurisdiction. So I'll hand over to you to discuss.
Noble.
Yes, thank you. I think your argument about the urgency of the project made sense if it were prior to the effective date of IFRS 15, but it's already effective now. We would rather see this issue discussed together with the more broader project on IS 37. Our main concern is about the definition of economic benefits. If you don't really have that right, you don't know which cost you want to match it to. And also, there might be some discussions about the unit of account and which types of contracts you might want to combine together. And therefore, we'd want to see them discussed together.
Thank you. We're broadly supportive of the line of travel in the project. I think we agree that being clear what costs should be included in calculating an onerous contract, it's important we clarify that. And we also support that directly related cost is probably a clearer definition and provides better information than the alternative that's discussed. But we would think it's worthwhile exploring further other definitions of cost in the management accounting literature because there are various strands of a theme. So we'd encourage you to do that. The other thing that we were slightly unsure of is I think we were clear the nature of the costs that you were suggesting should be included in the determination of whether a contract was onerous. We weren't sure whether the same costs would be included in the calculation of the actual provision itself. And we'd suggest they ought to be, but it wasn't clear.
That's exactly the same point here is, I think you clarify, it's important to clarify that concept, but as he mentioned, one thing is to determine if it's an onerous contract or not. The only thing is which costs are you going to include in the provision itself, and not necessarily the same. To take depreciation, for example, depreciation is going to be to go to P&L anyway. You have an onerous contract provision accounted for or not. So are you taking this depreciation charge that is going to P&L anyway and allocate this depreciation charge to this provision? It was not clear to me if that, and I don't know if that's desirable. It's just because depreciation charge, for example, will happen anyway. Take for example, depreciation charge that will happen anyway, 20% method, just to simplify it. So should I allocate the depreciation charge to this provision? This doesn't seem to be the case for me. And I think that should be clear here. I was not clear. I could not see which approach are you proposing. Did I make myself clear? I don't know.
Yeah, I think there would be cases where depreciation would be included, because what you're trying to get is a measure of the costs that will, in the future, go into supplying the goods or services, and one of those costs will be the cost of the consumption of the property, plant, and equipment that you're using. And so it could include depreciation.
On the measurement of the provision.
Mm-hmm. Or at least in identifying all this clarification would be in identifying whether the contract is onerous or not.
On identifying, I have no doubt about it. I'm just asking, after you do identify it, would you allocate part of your costs? Mm-hmm. That would be going to a P&L anyway to this.
That wouldn't be covered in this.
You're going to use the plant and machinery for something else. Right.
Or not?
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, it needs to be clarified. I don't have an opinion really here, but it should be clarified here. It's not, I think. You?
Okay. Thank you. This ED has been translated into Chinese and issued in China for comments. The deadline is April the 8th. We will collect the comments from Chinese stakeholders and provide feedback to ISB in due course. Based on the observations and feedback we already received, we support ISB's proposal to clarify that the cost of fulfilling a contract comprises the cost related directly to the contract. Because compared with the incremental cost approach, this proposal will provide a more faithful representation of the cost of fulfilling a contract and reduce diversity or inconsistency in applying IAS 37. In addition, the proposal will help entities to identify onerous contracts earlier and result in more adequate provisions. Meanwhile, it will also effectively solve the problem faced by the company on how to account for the onerous contracts. Yeah, that's it.
Raymond?
I think we're generally supportive, I think, of the process that has been followed, the suggestions that have been made. There are a few things that I think we would like to just make sure we are clear about. The one thing is what's been mentioned already, the definition of economic benefits, because I don't think that's very clear. It hasn't been tackled as well as we think that it should have been. And there are a few areas where I think there's words that have been used that seem to focus on the constructions type space. And while we understand, I think because of the scrapping IAS 11, that's had to come in, but including the wording, the way that it has been included, it seems to focus on that. It seems to give the impression that onerous contracts only exist in that particular space, which is not necessarily the case. So I think if that can be looked at as well.
Linda.
Thanks. So we did our typical drill. We did some limited outreach. Staff did a very good job on that. We drafted a comment letter, and then we made the mistake of sending it out to our board. Just joking. So I'm not exactly sure where we're going to land because we're discussing it at our April board meeting. But we will have the comment letter in on time, so don't worry about that. So I've got some who intuitively like the notion of the directly related cost because it makes sense. To determine that a contract is onerous, you want to say I've got this benefit coming in and I've got these costs, and then I can determine if that contract is onerous. But there are others who feel that if you're actually going to book your provision based on that analysis, some of those costs may actually be covered by other contracts because they're allocated costs and they're not going to go away. And so there's others who are concerned that they have some discomfort with that. We are going to actually discuss the notion of economic benefits, so I don't know if we're going to comment on that in our comment letter, so more to come on that. In terms of the second question, Staff has, and others have identified a couple of inconsistencies we think you should think about. One is looking at IES 2 around inventories. In IES 2, you're told to expense abnormal wastage, but in paragraph 68A and 68B of the exposure draft, that's inconsistent with how you're treating it in onerous contracts. And then as well on IS 16 and IS 38, there's a notion of what you do with administrative and other general overheads, but we think 68B is inconsistent with those two standards. And so you're going to have to pick what you want to do, and then we'd like some rationale maybe in the basis for why you've made the particular decision you've made in terms of going forward. I think we'll probably land on the fact that we disagree that you wouldn't allow retrospective. Maybe you don't want to require retrospective, but a lot of users have said that they would prefer retrospective because we already don't have perfect comparability between entities, but at least retrospective gives them some idea in terms of the time periods involved. So I think we're likely to comment on that. And so I think in general, those are the things that we're thinking about in terms of our comment letters. But again, the board will be looking at it when they meet, I think, next week.
EH.
Thank you. This proposed change should be treated very carefully because the change will have financial impact to the preparer. At the same time, we have some system impact, meaning the IT system impact. We all know that this proposed change will impact both construction and service company. At the same time, will very much impact manufacturing, general manufacturing sales company. And we are very much concerned about the manufacturing and sales type of traditional businesses. For manufacturing industry, we learned that from the discussion with many representative preparers that onerous contract hasn't been an issue in practice. Actually, they didn't report onerous contract because they thought even if the IFRS is not clear, they didn't interpret it as a total cost. They rather interpret it as incremental cost from manufacturing industry side. So if the change is made and it becomes very clear that it will cover both variable and allocated costs, then manufacturing industry should calculate and report the many onerous contract, and it will they will have some financial impact in the financial statement. At the same time, they have to monitor every period of time whether they really have onerous contracts or not, because they haven't doing the kind of exercise in the past because they didn't really thought the onerous contracts should be reported based on the total cost. So, to be prepared to report these onerous contracts every year, probably at the end of the year, because this has to do with the contracts which has been made, but it hasn't been realized as a revenue at the end of the year. And probably we have to look at how much cost should be borne by the preparers in screening and calculating the amount, financial impact. And I've been discussing with many companies, and they say to be ready to monitor and calculate this onerous contract, they have to spend an awful lot of money. And at the same time, there will be a lot of debates with auditors and preparers because the numbers, amount of onerous contracts will depend very much depending upon the allocated amount of common expenses, actually. So there are a lot of disputes among what's the incremental cost, what's the total cost, and the system cost will be really huge, maybe different depending upon the industry.
And
could I just
Linda, ask you about the comment about the retrospective on the onerous contracts. I just thought that if it went retrospective, there could be a look-back bias. I'm just wondering if...
Well, sure there could be. There, certainly, but, you know, I think that, you know, we face that on a regular basis. And so you're not supposed to use hindsight, and ideally people, you know, would get past that. I think, you know, in particular, we are sensitive to what users tell us in terms of the information. And so the feedback that we got was, you know, they would prefer to see retrospective if it was possible. And so is it possible to allow it as opposed to require it? So, you know, again, the board will look at that next week, but that was the early feedback that we got.
Mm. Okay. Thank you.
We agree with the general view that it's a good idea for the ISB to address this, so we strongly support that. We're concerned about contracts that are not construction contracts because questions have been raised about whether there will be unintended consequences because we've not had this particular requirement so obviously before at this detailed level. And the other thing that created quite some debate was what order do you apply things in? If you've, and R36 says you go to an asset, you do impairment on an individual asset before you do the onerous contracts test. But then some of the provisions in R36 leave some doubt in some people's minds as to exactly what order you do it in. And I think it's just worth reviewing that part of it, just to make sure that the board's intentions are clear. Because some people thought you would impair the asset, then impair the contract effectively as separate events, and there was the potential for double counting. So it was more a clarity question to make sure that those who are concerned about the potential confusion are not concerned.
I think we can look at that in IS37, although IS37 already says you impair the asset first.
Yes,
you do the impairment first, and then it's what's there. And that means that it when you're making onerous contract provisions, it's largely relating to costs you haven't yet incurred, as opposed to assets you've already bought that will be used to fulfil a contract.
Yes, and then people were saying, well, does that I use the asset before the impairment to go into that cut. I think it's a clarification. I don't think anybody's having a problem with the principle, but some people were reading it with the potential for double counting. So it was more looking for a clarification than trying to change the principle.
Yeah.
Reena?
This is for the ASG and just providing feedback. So we had feedback from Hong Kong, from China, from India and Australia. Overall, our members were supportive of the proposals. Hong Kong and Australia thought it would be good to clarify what are the directly related costs and cost of fulfilling the contract. Also, a comment was made by India that the same comment I think that Alexandra made as well on what is that the contract that the same cost should be used to measure the provision that actually used to identify the provision. Because I think it is clarified, as the comment is made in the basis for conclusions, that the same cost should be used, but it would be good if that could actually be incorporated in the standard, because there's obviously there's some confusion. And finally, also, and I think that comes later in the provisions as well, when we talk about topic six, is that looking more broadly at what are economic benefits, and that really factors in as well in the calculations. There's a lot of uncertainty and need for clarity on what are economic benefits.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
That brings us to the end of this conversation.